you, Sharon, and it's my pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to you about my interaction with Ray, and also great to see Bill Larson. I hadn't seen him for quite some time. And I want to start by telling you the kind of interaction that I had with Ray, and it really started when I was a graduate student at Oregon State from 1975 to 1980. And you heard about his life and the fact that he was working at Pendleton, Oregon, so it wasn't on the campus, but it was quite a while before I got a chance to actually meet him. And you saw that he worked with the STEEP project, Solution to Economic and Environmental, and Erosion Problems in the Pacific Northwest. And that was my first encounter with Ray. We needed to purchase a neutron probe, and we were trying to decide which one to get. And, of course, my advisor, Jerry Kling and Maura Hall, decided, well, let's ask Ray. And, of course, he was quite helpful in helping us sort that out. So that was my first encounter with him, and I'll talk about the second one, but it basically was after he was back in Minnesota when he was working on water quality, and he worked with us. So you've already heard a lot of people talk about, talk about the qualities that Ray had. And I just want to add to that by saying that when I look at Ray and the broad range of things that he worked on, I certainly will say that he was rare in when we compare him to today's scientists. He was an excellent scientist, very meticulous, as we all have heard before, and I will reiterate that. His research, we've heard this before as well, covered a wide range of topics. Anything you could think of, you know that Ray had worked on it. And we talked a bit about his being an applied scientist, and we talked about whether or not he was a soil physicist. Well, I view him as an applied soil physicist, and a very good applied soil physicist at that. And I will say that he worked on both basic and applied research. And what I'm going to focus on is really the research that he's done on soil temperature and heat flux. We also know that he's done a lot of applied research related to soil erosion and every aspect of soil erosion, conservation tillage, and I guess I disagree with Don on the term conservation tillage. I accept Ray's definition and assessment of that, that it is conservation tillage because it conserves the soil when we're doing that. And in the last part of his years, water quality, and this is where I had an opportunity to work with him in water quality. We've also talked about the fact that he's published extensively and excellent papers in almost every area of soil science and outside of soil science that one can think of. He's made those kind of contributions. So let me now focus on what I really want to talk about, the work that he's done in soil thermal properties, surface energy balance of soil, and modification related to tillage. And what I'm going to really focus on is this publication by Ray and others that's actually a Minnesota Technical Bulletin 306, because I had to basically learn this, as you'll see when you look at my slides from here out. And you can see that I wrote my name on the top of this book when I got it, because whenever anyone borrowed it, I wanted to make sure that if they didn't return it, they would feel guilty every time they look at the top of it, the fact that they should return it back to me. And you'll see why I cherish this. So here's my markings. I went to Wisconsin in 1980. I completed my degree at Oregon State. And when I got there, Tommy Daniel, you saw in one of the publications that was put up there in the science publication, had started doing research in Wisconsin on conservation tillage. And he was looking at it from a water quality standpoint. And when I came, my charge was to look at it from the impact it had on soil physical properties. And one of the problems that the farmers were dealing with in Wisconsin, being the state where just a little south of Minnesota, where the glacier has only left a few years ago, and we still have some of the cold remnants of it, the farmers were having problems with conservation tillage, in particular no-till, because the soil was so cold when they plant the crop, and the emergence of particular corn, they were having problems with it. And so our charge was to try and figure this out. because Tommy had figured out that it was doing really good things for water quality, and therefore we need to figure out how to get the farmers to adopt this more. Excuse me. And to get them to adopt this more, we need to learn something about the thermal properties. Well, that's why I went through this publication that Ray has here in great detail. As you can see, my markings, and this is the second page of that I really had marked up. And I had a graduate student by the name of Mike Johnson, actually my first graduate student that we worked on this. But before I talk about that, what I want to do is talk about the data that Ray collected. And I point out this mobile unit here, because that was a laboratory that they had, and they were collecting data. And you'll see the caption there that it says, this mobile laboratory was used to house the service, the data acquisition system that was taking repeated measures of 90 different micrometeorological sensors over 48 hours. Now, we have it easy today. We have our little, very small handheld or other type of devices or data loggers that we can put in the field and go out and take our readings every few seconds if we want, however quick we can scan it. But they're talking about 48 hours to run this through these 90 sensors. The other part of that, the bottom photograph there, I can get this point, is the catwalk that was made to be able to then go across the field and take these measurements without disturbing the soil, because they were working on tillage and the soil had been tilled and they wanted to conserve the integrity of that soil, particularly the structure of it, and they didn't want to compact it. And so it had this device then to be able to go off and take bulk density samples and other measurements. So I want to point out that these data were being collected from 1964 to 1977. So this was quite some time ago. But yet and still, you can see some of the kind of data that I'm going to show you that they collected. And we're still doing the same thing today. And I had to go to John Norman to try and figure out something about these humidity sensors, because I didn't know what the heck these big cones were for. And so John had worked with Champ Tanner in some very similar kind of measurements, and he explained that the humidity sensors, these cones at the top at 100 centimeters, and then the one down below here at 10 centimeters above the soil surface, were used to measure relative humidity, but they had to aerate it, so they had to suck air in. And so he said that there was a pump here that was actually pulling air through this. And you can think about the very small units we have now to measure relative humidity and what was done then. You can see an anemometer cup in the background, and then there were pyranometer measurements, measure solar radiation in the back, and air temperature at 100 centimeters above the surface throughout that field. So these are the kind of detailed measurements that Ray was doing that we're still doing today, but he was doing them long before us. And another one is the thermocouples that he was putting in. And this is one that was in 10 centimeters above the soil surface. And one of the things I learned in working and taking these kind of measurements is you had to shield it. So you can't see the thermocouple, because what you got here is a shield on it to keep the sunlight so that you can retain the integrity of measuring the air and not having the wire heat up from sunlight. So he went through great detail to make very quality measurements for soil temperature. And I'll point in the background, you may not be able to see it, but this is not a TDR, John Baker, who has done a lot in this area, but a neutron access tube for measuring soil water content. And so to get the water content then, they didn't have the wonderful devices we have now and some of the pioneering work, because Clark Topp didn't do that until 1980. And to get these, they had to use the neutron access tube. And these are data that he showed on the volumetric water content for two soils. And you'll notice that there are readings that are volumetric with the neutron probe in a triangle here, and the gravimetric measurements are the circle measurements here. Notice how far down these gravimetric measurements were taken, down to 110 centimeters. Now, we sent our graduate students out today to do this. We're not going to come back with these kind of measurements down to 110 centimeters. But somehow Ray was able to get this done. And if you look on the next slide, he's got a comparison here again with a neutron probe all the way down. Notice that the surface, he's also got a gravimetric reading. And the reason is because the neutron probe, if you're going to measure at the surface, you're going to have escape of neutrons and potential health hazard. So he knew that. He didn't make the students take the measurements or the other people take measurements at the surface. You had to measure it with a gravimetric analysis there. Now back to the data with the temperature, because that's where I want to really focus on. But he needed all the other data in order to really get at these kind of numbers that he's going to get from this. And so what this one, this slide shows is the soil temperature at the soil surface at 10 centimeters above with that shielded thermocouple that I showed you, and then at the 100 centimeters above the soil surface. And this is for the plow system. And you saw that catwalk where they were going across without compacting it. The reason they didn't want to compact this is because they wanted that integrity of being able to have a measure at the soil surface, at depth below, and so that minus 9 would be below the teal layer, 24 centimeters below. And what I'll point out is that you'll notice the maximum temperature here, and this is a 24-hour period because he's going to use harmonic analysis to get at thermal conductivity. And then here are the other three systems that they were comparing, a plow system, and notice the temperature now in this plow system that has been packed. It's greater than the one we saw before, and then we look at the maximum temperature over here with one that has been disked, so it wouldn't have the kind of porosity the other one did, so it's a little bit higher too. And then here's a system that we were going to work on that Ray had done something with this prior to our looking at it, where you have the plow system, but you got a residue on the surface of it. And that's where he was getting at what's the impact of conservation tillage on soil thermal properties. By putting the residue on it, you're going to reflect out a lot more of the incoming solar radiation. You're not going to have as much getting in and warming the soil up. So Ray had done these kind of measurements, and as I said, I'd gone through the book, really looked at this in great detail, so that I could start a program very similar to this. But one of the other things that he wanted to get at was actually heat flux. In order to get at the heat flux, he had to come up with thermal conductivity or thermal diffusivity. And he was analyzing two different methods. He was using the Vries method of calculating the thermal conductivity, and he was comparing that then to the harmonic analysis. And so what he plotted here in this slide is the DeVries method on the x-axis, and on the y-axis he has the harmonic analysis. And what he had done was to prove that the DeVries method did not take into consideration all of the kind of parameters that you needed to, and that it missed the conduction. So as air moved in, it would warm things up, and this method didn't take account for that. And he further wasn't accepting the fact that he'd already proven this. So then he went back and he said, okay, now what if I take and scale everything to my plow system, because I figured that, my pack system, because I figured that would be one that I could see whether there's still some differences here. And when he plotted this now, you can see that some things line up, but you still have these out over here. And then it was further proof that he was right. So we talked about how meticulous he was. So if he did something one way, that wasn't good enough. He had to do it another way to make sure that he had what he thought he had there. Excuse me. And so this shows that he was able to see that, yes, indeed, there was a problem here of taking that method. And he basically is saying the harmonic analysis is the way one want to do these kind of measurements. And so as a result of that, when I started doing this, I started looking at harmonic analysis, because I had looked at this publication, and some of you know Champ Tanner and Ed Miller, in particular Bill Bland sitting in the audience there was Champ Tanner's graduate student, and you know that when you go and talk to Champ, you better know what you were talking about. So this is what I want to get to. I mocked up that book from Ray because I wanted to go in and talk to Champ about making these measurements. And Ray was basically the guiding light for me to be able to go in there and sit down with Champ and have a decent conversation without being thrown out of the office on my ear. And so it was just a great opportunity to be able to sit down with Champ and Ed and work through this. And they themselves were obviously giants in the field of soil physics. So that's why I say Ray definitely was a soil physicist. And so 8 years after Ray's 1977 publication, my first graduate student, a master's student, Mike Johnson, and myself published a paper on the effect of three conservation tillage practices on the thermal properties of soil. And it was based on harmonic analysis. And you can see here some of the data that you saw, very similar to what Ray had done, and had proven that the best way to do this was to use harmonic analysis and have repeated measures. Now, we had moved a little bit farther along in the development of being able to take measurements than what Ray had, so now we have the CR5 data logger. Some of you may remember that printed out on a piece of paper, and you could get a tape readout of it, and that was quite an advancement for that. And so we were able to collect these data for four tillage systems. The CN there means a conventional tillage system, which was mold board plowed and disc however many times so that you disrupt and remove all the residue from the surface, and that was what we would consider not to be conservation tillage. The second one, the TP, is till plant, whereby you're planting on a ridge. And I'm going to come back and define this one a bit later, because I'm going to talk about how Ray convinced everyone in NESA to use this. The next one is chisel, the CH, is for chisel plowing, and of course this one leaves quite a bit of residue. And the final one is no-till, a zero tillage, where all the residue is left on the surface. And this would be compared to the plow with mulch that Ray had used in his publication. So we used these data then to come up with the same kind of things that he was doing, but in a little different fashion, to come up with thermal properties of soil. I'm going to come back to that because I want to go down here to this slide, say that this is where we sort of departed from the method that he was doing, because we were trying to figure out how we looked at how much heat was getting into the different systems. Because we have residue on the surface of no-till that's reflecting it out, we have completely different physical properties, and we were trying to convince the farmers that they should be able to use conservation tillage. And so when we started plotting our data, these graphs here gave us the kind of insight that we needed. And these increase in average temperature over time. And using some work by Carzel and Yeager in their publication, we know that if you start out at some point and we look at the increase over time, we can start calculating out the heat flux into the soil. And so using these graphs, we then were able to go back, look at more detail. This is Ray's publication, and this is our publication, where we are looking at the same kind of thing, but then moving out into a different direction. And so the different direction we moved into was actually trying to calculate out heat flux. And so we used the soil as a calorimeter and started to look at that increase over time and solve some rather difficult equations. And we moved into this area with this equation. And then the last part of that was that what we had to do was solve this equation. We actually had to differentiate it. And we ended up being able to do that with about 5 pages of handwritten calculus. And to make sure that it was right, my student did it one time, I did it one time, and Champ Tatter checked it. And once we passed his checking, then we were okay. We had it worked out. Then we came up with an equation, but it turns out we had two different equations to solve or to say that there was heat flux into the soil. And so this is where working with Champ and Ed was so great, because we would sit down at lunchtime and we'd go over different things. And one of the discussions we had, because Champ had looked at the equation, I had looked at them, my student had looked at them, and we both had decided, okay, we're going to have these different equations for each one of those tillage systems. Well, one day Ed Miller was in, and we were talking about this, and Ed took the paper and looked up at it. And being the great mathematician he was, he said, oh, they're all the same. What do you mean they're all the same? Oh, if you put a 1 or 2 there, you have the same equation. And so then he helped us to come out with this calculation. Let me just step back. And from that, then, we were able to take what Ray had done and calculate out the heat capacity of the soil, the volumetric heat capacity of the soil. Then using that and the harmonic analysis, we could calculate the thermal conductivity and the thermal diffusivity of the soil. We calculated an emittance, and then what we're able to do is to calculate the heat flux into the soil. So that we had the heat flux here, and then we could look at the total heat that was put into the soil. And here is some of the kinds of things that Ray had shown. When you put surface cover on, you're going to get a lot less heat in. But interesting thing that happened is that the heat flux in the no-till was actually greater. It had a greater density. It had more water content, so the heat flux was greater, but you had that residue on the surface that didn't let it heat up. And so coming at this a complete different way, but looking at different tillage systems, we used the great work that was foundation that was laid by Ray to come up with this. Another 2 years later, my first PhD student was working on similar kinds of things, looking at feed zone soil temperature. And the same three systems, and I showed you the middle part of his work here earlier, but not having the kind of probably whatever it takes to get students out that perhaps people like Ray did, I couldn't get them to understand that you really got to be out there every day to take these measurements. And so if you look at the first graph here on this, you'll notice that what we were trying to do is to figure out how fast plant emerged. And so we had these 1 meter sections in the field that you go out and you count the amount of corn that had emerged over time. Well, you can see that he completely missed this year. And we didn't really get the separation in looking at emergence. When he got out there, the crop had already emerged. And so the next year, after a nice discussion with him, he was able to get this done properly. And we can see now the separation between conventional tillage and no tillage and how far it lags behind in emergence over time. And then the same thing in the third year. So he was able to publish some things, again, taking off from some of the things that people like Ray had done and show that further application of the tillage effect on soil thermal properties and plant growth. Now I'm going to move to the last part of the thing I wanted to talk about with my interaction with Ray and the time that I finally got a chance to actually work with this person that I had known a lot about. And that was with the Management System Evaluation Area, the MESA projects. There was one in Minnesota, Ohio, Missouri, and Iowa. And North Dakota and South Dakota with Sharon and David in South Dakota and Ray in North Dakota, not Ray Ameris, Ray Knighton, thank you, was running one. And myself and Kevin McSweeney was running one in Wisconsin as a satellite to the Minnesota one. And when we sit down to try and figure out what we were going to do and how we were going to do it, Ray was a person that worked with the MESA project and helped us to outline the tillage system. What better person than to help us with that than to have Ray to come up with a system so that we could reduce nitrate leaching, but also primarily atrazine and Alachlor were the two herbicides that we were working on trying to reduce that leaching. So in the end, so now I'm going to jump to, and then I'm going to come back to talking about how Ray convinced us to use a till plant system. So in the end, as you had seen earlier, I think Sharon showed that he was a guest editor for the Soil and Tillage Research Journal that summarized all of the papers that were published on these different MESA projects. And he was guest editor with Jim Anderson in this. And I doubt that Soil and Tillage researchers had any papers published that received as much attention as these papers did here. I can tell you from firsthand experience, Ray went over my paper, and I think others have said this. I sent it in after Kevin and myself, it's the one down here, Dave Stoltenberg, Kevin McSweeney, and others. We thought that we had this a perfect paper. We sent it in, it came back marked up from Ray. Okay, we make all those changes, and we thought, okay, now it's ready to be accepted. We sent it back in, it's marked up by Ray. I can't remember how many iterations of that paper I went through, but it's the only paper that I've ever published that had that many iterations done by the editor. And I'm sure that the rest of the people in these eight publications, Sharon is shaking her head saying yes, received the same kind of editorial oversight and put on a microscope that he did. Now I'm going to come back to the thing that I wanted to talk about, and that is how he convinced everyone to look at Tilplant as the system that we were trying to use. What we were trying to do was to identify a tillage practice that we could use that would allow us to reduce the use of herbicide and leaching of herbicide to groundwater. And the site in Minnesota was on a sandy soil, and so was the site in Wisconsin, North and South Dakota. And one of the things that we wanted to do was to be able to reduce the amount of herbicide. Well, Tilplant works out to be the best system to do that, and that was how Ray was telling us that we could do it. Because you plant on a ridge, as is shown here, and then the previous crop has been harvested off, and so the top is left with residue scattered everywhere. And when you plant, you basically cut this system off as it's, let me get my, as is shown here, and the residue is thrown on the side. Well, what it does is leave a middle area that we could then come back and put the herbicide in. So you're only now putting on one-third the herbicide you normally would use where you would be broadcasting in any other case. And then when you come back to reestablish the ridge, you would reestablish the ridge here, and you would till the soil in between, and that's how you would remove the other weeds. And so it worked out to be a great system. It did reduce the leaching of herbicide to groundwater. And so his whole thought process about how this would work was proved over the next few years in the research that was done to show that Tilplant actually could be used as a system to reduce the amount of herbicide used in coarse textured soils and the leaching of material through that. And this is the publication I think that Sharon showed earlier that Hatfield was the primary author on, Jerry Hatfield, with Ray. And this was when I finally got a chance to get my name associated with Ray as having a publication with him. So I want to end here by saying that through this publication, it allowed me to publish several papers with my graduate students and to work through this. And I certainly enjoyed the years of an opportunity to work with Ray and others, but in particular Ray for this publication and others with the MESA project. So I thank you. I'll take comments and questions now.